a gun in the face.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
Started 2 years of horror for an American in Venezuela.
They said, you need to give us your phone and get ready because you're coming with us.
I'm Becky Bruce, and I spent a year researching and piecing together Josh and Tammy Holt's story about their ordeal in a notorious prison.
That's when everything started to turn bad. We had another pound on the door. Boom, boom, boom. And there was the police once again.
You can binge all of the episodes of Hope and Darkness on KSLPodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's time to get outside. This is KSL Outdoors, brought to you by Bear River Lodge. 2 hours of stories and information on hunting, fishing, and high adventure. KSL Outdoors with Tim Hughes on KSL News Radio 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
Welcome in. Hour number two and the final one for another week of KSL Outdoors Radio. This program being recorded on Thursday. Hope you're enjoying it this morning as listening as live, as we like to say. It's great to have you here on a Saturday morning. Hot one. We'll be back to 102 tomorrow. Today, whoo, it's going to be a big relief. We're only going to be 99 degrees. That'll feel so wonderful. Not. Anyway, we're just talking about ways to get away and cool yourself off. Last week, Navi and I did it with our wives up floating the Weber River with float tubes, which was a nice way to cool off for the day. Mm. And, you know, that's for children of all ages, by the way. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls. If you, turn back the hands of time a little bit and get out where you can to find some cooler air. Tim Hughes in the studios of KSL. Russ Smith is up at Sky Call in Sugar House. And I had no idea until we were talking during the break. You were such a bubble fan. Navi was talking about this bubble that you use to fish the higher lakes.
It's a very effective tool. Everybody needs one in the tackle box.
Well, Navi, here's what I like about it. It's so easy to understand. I wish most things about fishing were this easy. That makes sense that if the bubble is full of water, it goes to the bottom. If it's half full, it goes halfway down. And if you put less in that, it's going to stay closer to the surface.
Yeah.
You know, you make a wake. If you're doing the surface, make a wake, because fish are attracted to it in you. And as they come up to see what the heck's cruising the surface, and that way it's not so fly specific, you'll catch plenty.
I mentioned you could use a worm, but you said you could put a worm and a fly back there, and you're going to catch many more on the fly than you would the worm.
Yeah, because they don't see a lot of worms floating by on the surface, but they see a lot of flies. So it's what they're looking for, and basically you just throw yours in the mix, and if yours looks like what they're already looking for, you stand a better chance always.
Yeah. It's funny because Russ goes all the way back to age 14, I think, for his first bubble experience.
That's right.
Sounds like going out on your first date or something.
Oh, much more important than that.
Much more important than that.
Well, I mean, I've been using a bubble my whole life.
Yeah. Here's what I love about it. When it's full of water, your cast goes a mile.
Yeah. I mean, you got to be careful you don't send it to the other side of the lake.
It's actually true when you're up there in the Uintas. Hey, I want to bring Wendy Wilson into the conversation. She's the Antelope Island State Park Assistant Park Manager. We're going to talk bison safety today, Wendy, but if we can for just a minute, let's talk just briefly about lake levels, because on Utah's Morning News this week, we're talking about the fact that we're looking at 170-year-old record or something if we drop to those levels, which looks like it's going to happen in the next little while.
Well, that I didn't know. Actually, I knew that the lowest that on record that I was aware of was like in the 1960s.
Yeah.
So if there was more news than that, I wasn't aware. But we're really close to that for sure. It's definitely lower than I've ever seen it.
Needless to say, we don't need those Governor Bangeter pumps anytime soon that we're out there in the
Not
West
Not anytime
Desert.
Soon.
Yeah.
Let's hope that we need them at some point. But, yeah, for sure, they're way out there.
How has that changed, if at all, the island itself or visitation to the island?
It doesn't affect the visitation as much as it affects the visitors. So one of the reasons people come to Antelope Island is because it's easy access to Great Salt Lake. And that historically has been the case. You can still access the lake from the island, but it's definitely a walk out to the shoreline. It's probably 3/4 of a mile or more walk, depending on where you're going, to get into the water. If you want to avoid mud, right, you can certainly get in other spots, but it's going to be muddy around some spots because I've never seen the sunlight, some of those areas, and now they're all of a sudden exposed and they're pretty muddy.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it affects animals. Wildlife can certainly wander farther away off the island, more so than normal. And then it just affects, you know, how the people's enjoyment of actually being able to get in the lake and enjoy that saltwater float.
Yeah, here's the other thing I didn't realize until we did a report on it this week. And Navi, maybe you've heard this before, but the brine shrimp industry is like a $45 million a year business for fish food. And it's obviously going to have an effect on brine shrimp out there at the Great Salt Lake, which is sort of an angle nobody, I don't think, thought about until this week.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Brine shrimp are pretty hardy. They can handle pretty saline conditions, but they do have a limit. And, you know, as the lake declines, we're definitely inching up there in the salinity level. So that certainly does have an impact on brine shrimp and that whole brine shrimp industry. Yeah.
All right. Let's talk about bison and the public. It's one of the main attractions, right? When people go out to Antelope Island, Navi, you don't live far from there. But I'm sure you've had people ask questions, and you've probably told stories about the bison herd out there on Antelope Island. It's one of the main attractions.
You know, I go out there a lot, particularly fall and spring, and it's a great getaway. I stay away in the summer. My question for our expert here is the water. Look, I've seen a lot of animals out there. I mean, obviously, we have rabbits and fox and coyotes and, of course, bison and even a wolverine or two. My question is, where do those animals get water? Because I know water is really important to their survival. Can they drink the lake, or how do they get around that?
Yeah, actually, that's a pretty common question that we get. There are actually several natural freshwater springs on the island, some that are pretty consistent year-round. The Fildingar Ranch, if you're familiar with that, on the kind of the southeast side of the island, is actually built right on top of or right next to one of the major springs. And that whole area is fed by what we call mushroom springs. There are some on the west side as well and some further south. So there are quite a few freshwater springs. Some of them are only really running maybe during the spring, right after the snowmelt, but some, like I said, run year-round. So that's where they get that water from.
Yeah. Russ, one of our favorite stories to tell, and it comes up from time to time on the show, are the people up in West Yellowstone that decided they were going to take a baby bison calf and put it in their minivan because they wanted to take it to a safe place.
So I could offer some tips if you want to pick up a buffalo.
No, I don't think people actually want to do that.
Go to a full-size van, first off.
Wendy, I'm sure you've heard some crazy stories of people, and I don't know if it's because they look so big and cuddly or they just don't look that fast, but, boy, we've seen a lot of reports of people that go way too close to these big guys and gals.
Yeah,
you're not kidding. Yeah, I think it's probably all of those, right? They do look so big that you couldn't imagine that they could move as fast as they do. They do look like big, fluffy cows, which, you know, it's a cow, so how dangerous could it be? Nice. So, yeah, there's that. And plus, we're a state park, and I think a lot of visitors maybe who don't get out into the outdoors as much.
Think they're trained.
State parks.
Yeah,
more
buffalo.
Kind of domesticated, right?
Yeah.
So I think all of those things play a part.
Well, in the final couple of minutes we have, let's talk about ways to avoid altercations, not just interaction with, but altercations with. And it comes right down to even knowing what to do if you find one in the middle of the road.
Sure. Yeah, for sure. So really what we tell folks, what I like to tell folks is to stay, if you're in your car, stay closer to your car than you are to the bison. They can move really fast, up to 40 miles per hour. And they're very agile. So you might think, oh, you know, I could probably do a couple of, you know, quick turns or something and outmaneuver them, and you can't. They're very agile and very fast. So really just stay further away from the bison than you think you need to. If they're in the road and you're in your car, just stay in your car, roll down your window and take pictures that way. If they're out a ways, you're okay to get out of your car, but don't walk across the rangeland to get closer pictures, certainly.
Yeah. Here's the other thing I've observed just when I've seen them at Yellowstone or out on the island, and that is that they actually will stand still for quite a while. You can get pretty close to them before they feel intimidated because you're a lot smaller than they are. But by the time you're that close, you're in trouble.
For sure. And you know, and it's just like, they're just like people in a way. They've got different security bubbles. You know, some of them are fine with you, like you said, just kind of inching your way closer, but others are not. And really the way you'll know is by their body language. So if they stop what they're doing to look at you, then that's the first indication that you're too close. And that's pretty much probably true with any wild animal. If they notice you and they see you, they're feeling at that point a little bit threatened by you. So stop at that point and don't go any closer.
Yeah.
And with bison, they'll raise their tail up a little bit. They'll kind of cock it up. And that's, they're feeling pretty agitated at that point. And the higher that tail cocks up, more agitated they're feeling. So really watching them and watching their body language is important.
I like this recommendation, too. It says whatever distance you think you should remain from the animal, double it. How far back you should be. We would encourage people to go out and take advantage of this unique opportunity. There are, what was there at last count, I think, 500 is the maintained herd, 500 or around?
Over the winter. Yeah, around 500 over the winter. And then right now with babies, we're probably close to about 750.
Yeah. So anyway, take advantage of this rare opportunity, but be careful out there. Wendy, thanks for your time today.
You're welcome. My pleasure.
Wendy Wilson, the Antelope Island State Park Assistant Park Manager. A break. And when we come back, where are we going zip lining? We're going to go road tripping with Bob and Mark.
2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
There's desperation and anguish.
More than 80,000 Afghans have since arrived in America, but this story is still unfolding. I'm Andrea Martin. In my new podcast, Stranger Becomes Neighbor, we'll find out what happens to these new arrivals in our communities. Who would help our newest neighbors? Follow us at KSLPodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
Hey, it's time to hit the road. Bob and Mark are going to take us road tripping for another week.
On the road again. Just can't wait to get on the road again.
Kind of feel like I'm sitting in the back of the tour bus right now with Bob.
Yeah.
And ready to throw him overboard on the next stop because he won't stop playing this song on loop tape.
Every day.
Russ, Russ, I got to ask, you ever been ziplining in your life?
Well, yeah. When I was a kid, we'd make our own zip line.
From the roof of the house down to the shed?
Well, we're in the mountains. You know, you tie a rope on one end. You have a pulley. Nothing sophisticated like what you guys are talking about.
Yeah, probably a thrilling
fun,
ride.
You know?
I'm sure it was a thrilling ride until the very end.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, the zip line is fine. It's just that ending that's really tough. Mark is with us here. Mark Wade is also with us. You guys, Mark, have come up with a list of 8 of them that look like they stretch pretty much across the state here.
Well, in fact, there's about 4 of them that we'll start with that are up around the Wasatch Front area. Of course, out in the Provo Canyon area, there are 3 that we will talk about, and there's one up at Summit Park.
I didn't know there were 3 in Provo Canyon, Bob.
That has become the zip line capital of, well, at least Utah, I know, but I think it must be had more a higher concentration of zip lines there than just about any other place that I'm aware of anyway.
Where are they specific to the canyon? Do they have one around Bridal Veil?
Well, up from there, just below Deer Creek, a little ways, it's Provo Canyon Adventures. It's up nearer to that area. That's a really cool canopy zipline park. It's all in the trees. There's 5 zip lines, great for families. It's just right up against the Provo River and then in those side hills. Just absolutely gorgeous views of the mountains from there.
Mark, do you rate these as far as speed or length?
Well, you know, you can. Sundance, we just across from what the one Bob was just talking about up at Sundance, they've got some canopy zip lines there. But just up at Deer Creek Reservoir, they've got one that not only goes fast, but they say it's the longest zip line in North America that crosses over water. Whoa. And it crosses right across at about 40, 50 miles an hour. Yikes. Across an arm of Deer Creek Reservoir. So it's pretty impressive.
Chin here has three chances to get one of the breaks back.
Area. It goes over Rainbow Bay and is the longest in the world.
Wow.
That crosses over water.
Now, I've known about the one at Sundance, and Winter Olympic Park also has one that I have not experienced, but I have heard people talk about how fun it is.
Yeah, the one up at in the Olympic Park, they've actually have a new one now that's eight towers that goes over some of the more scenic area of the Olympic Park. And this is a fairly new park or a fairly new zip line course, but it's I've done the old one. I haven't done this new one yet. I've been on the old zip lines up at the Olympic Park from the past, but I haven't tried out the new one yet. But I understand that's a really exciting and thrill ride now that goes over through eight different towers.
Mark, tell us about Raven's Rim. I guess that one's around Moab.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Bob may be the one that has to answer that one because I have not done Raven's Rim. Bob, have you done that one?
I have. Susan and I went down that a few years ago. This is really a thrill. It's more than just zip lining. The first to get there, the office is down near the highway 191. You take an off-road adventure trip just to get up to the first tower. Then it's six towers that go over the Slick Rock area in the Sands Flat Recreation Area. You'll see mountain bikers and off-roaders around there. And then there's a long suspension bridge, I think 100-foot suspension bridge. And I think they've added more recently a Via Ferrata in the area as well. So it's more than just a zip line adventure. It's a whole package of adventure there. And it is really a cool thing to do.
All right. How about one down in your neck of the woods, Mark? The ATV and Jeep adventure, the Paragon Adventures.
Yeah, Paragon is the two companies actually cooperate with each other for this adventure. You're taking ATVs or UTVs up on the sand dunes to a point where they actually don't have an established zip line that's there every day. They set up a zip line just for these tours, and you're running, I think it's about an 800-foot zip line over a canyon off of these big sand dunes and big red rock formations, and it's pretty spectacular. But it's part of that package with the UTV or ATV adventure.
I'm going to guess you're familiar, too, Mark, with Mystic River, because that sounds like it's right there in the Ponderosa Ranch backyard.
It is, just off of 89, and it runs down there. There's the river that's running right down through next to 89 there. Ponderosa actually has a zip line, about 400-foot zip line as well. So there's those smaller ones that are dotted throughout the probably different parts of the state that are shorter one-time zipline experiences.
All right. We've only got a minute here, Mark, or Bob, but I see Yuba State Park is on here. I had no idea.
Yeah, they've got a couple of ziplines there. I think somewhere around 650 feet long, a couple of lines that are near the Oasis Campground. So if you're familiar with the Yuba State Park area and Oasis Campground, that's where you're going to find it, right across from there.
Is there such a thing as an average cost to get on one of these? I know they're varied, but...
Oh, they vary considerably. I mean, so some of them can get a little pricey, but you know, the adventure is bigger, but they're very reasonably priced. I've noticed in the Provo Canyon area with Provo Canyon Ventures, Zipline Utah, I think you're going to find that the costs are fairly reasonable considering the amount of time that you're going to be spending.
Yeah. And is it one zip or do you get multiple zips for the price?
You get multiple zips. Some of them have packages where you can go, they'll have multiple zip lines and you can purchase packages that will include X number of zip lines or the full kahuna.
Mark, I know you guys have got a map, I think, mapping all these out on your blog site, right?
We do. If you just go to roadtrippingwithbobandmark.com, go right to the very front page there. You'll see a picture of somebody on the zip line. Click on that, and you'll see the map.
I've done it one time in my life. We were up at Whistler in the middle of a ski season, so we were in full ski gear, and it was a multiple zip line thing across a big canyon in the winter. And Navidovskis is behind me, daring me to get on there, and then forcing everybody to go hands-free and hang upside down so you're dangling by your feet. And he's of course, applying the pressure to do that. I did it. We turn around, and, of course, he will not.
That's, of course.
we get all the way to the other side after he's made us feel bad about it, and he would not let go of that pulling.
Oh, I gotta say, this is a great adventure. This is an adventure that grandma can do,
yeah,
from grandkids to grandparents.
It really is fun. All right, guys, thanks. We'll take a break for news. Stay right there.
2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
There's desperation and anguish.
More than 80,000 Afghans have since arrived in America, but this story is still unfolding. I'm Andrea Martin. In my new podcast, Stranger Becomes Neighbor, we'll find out what happens to these new arrivals in our communities. Who would help our newest neighbors? Follow us at KSLPodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.